Thank you, ladies, gentlemen, children of all ages. We have a very special guest back with us tonight to continue decrypting the matrix of this tricky language and law situation we have upon ourselves. Last episode, if you were lucky enough to tune in, it was very interesting. We talked at length about military law, martial law, the differences between the two, how the Jesuits started the crisis, what is the market crash of 1929. Obviously, they wanted to present a solution to this problem that they created in the first place. That solution was FDR. And then we continued to see names bumble around. On Jay Raskob, he was with DuPont, General Motors, behind the Empire State Building, Al Smith, Nicholas Brady, Harry Truman, a ton of other Jesuit coadjutors that I'm sure we'll explore further tonight, along with straw man concepts, with how your birth certificate is traded on the stock market. It has an associated value to it, and how we're all just corporate entities wherever we see our name referenced in all caps. So tonight we have a very special guest. Eric, buddy, how are you? Mr. Eric John Phelps of Vatican Assassins, author of Vatican Assassins, Wounded in the House of My Friends, chief editor of VaticanAssassins.org. Mr. Eric John Phelps, so glad to have you here with us tonight. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing fine. Can you hear me okay, Max?
Yeah, definitely can hear you loud and clear. Can't wait to see what you have in store. I know you've been researching and kind of further digging in since the last time we talked. What have you continued to uncover?
Okay. did you want to go into the military process, or did you want to do a little bit more background before we get into it?
Yeah, let's maybe give a little more background. You're always good at the background stuff, and then a good foundation has been set. We'll jump right into the military stuff that really gets interesting.
Okay, remember, whenever you study history, it's like wading out into a river. You want to know where that river comes from before you examine the way it is there. So you got to go upstream and then flow down the river. And then you come to the present where you are, and then you can understand how it got there.
Ah, makes perfect sense.
Okay, so we want to realize that the Jesuit order, with their assassination of Lincoln, saw the assassination, and he was the one that was the confessor of Mary Surratt. And when they killed Lincoln, because Lincoln was not going to go along with the 14th Amendment, he was not going to go along with the consolidation of states under Washington being supreme, they killed him and then replaced him with Andrew Johnson. And Andrew Johnson became disobedient because he didn't want to go along with the 14th Amendment either. So the House impeached him. And when it went to the Senate, remember, when the Senate is trying the president, they all dress in green. And they acquitted him by one vote, which was Salmon G.P. Chase's vote.
Interesting.
Okay. So then Johnson became an obedient servant after that. And then as this new government starts to progress in 1868 with the 14th Amendment, they create a new republic. The republic that was created by George Washington and those other white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Calvinists and Baptist Calvinists died on July 28, 1868. And so it's utterly ridiculous to celebrate this republic. It should be celebrated on July 28th, not July 4th. So
wow.
We have a second republic. This is what I call the Second Republic, and it serves as the foundation for what will become the Pope's Holy Roman, 14th Amendment, Socialist, Communist, Corporate, Fascist, American Empire. This new republic now will have a center city in... are you there, Max? Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Oh, yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
I thought I lost you. In 1871... Washington, D.C. was incorporated because Leo XIII has said that it's the duty of every Roman Catholic to model the government of the country in which he lives after the papacy. So this is exactly what the Jesuits were doing. They centered power, and then the states really in substance became provinces, conquered provinces. And these provinces, even though they're on their face, they're states, they opened a false policy that they're sovereign states. The secret but true policy is they're conquered provinces and subject to Washington. And in 1869, the Supreme Court case titled Texas versus White. And in that case, the Supreme Court said that no state has the right to secede.
Wow. Okay.
So this meant that this was completely different than the way it used to be, because the states of the previous republic had the right to.
Right.
The state of New Jersey and the state of Virginia. So this new republic, the states in this new republic don't have the right to secede. And by the way, locally in Lancaster, they started a paper about this time. It was called the Lancaster New Era. And so we embarked upon a new era. It's a new government. The old union is gone. And a new union has been created with the 14th Amendment. Well, this new union, this new republic, is going to be the hammer militarily attack nations and restore and reduce their governments to being subordinate to the Vatican, being submitted to the temporal power of the Pope.
You got to hand it to them. They're telling you exactly what they're doing. If you look closely at their verbiage and, you know, what these laws are saying, it's funny how they're actually telling you exactly what they're doing.
It's hidden in plain sight.
Yep.
Right out in front of you. Okay, so as the Jesuits do this, they now begin to build their cartel corporate monopolies. The steel monopoly with J.P. Morgan.
Yep.
Remember, J.P. Morgan will buy the steel industry of Andrew Carnegie. He will buy the steel industry for $100 million less than what it's really worth. The first head of U.S. Steel will be a knight of Malta named John Farrell. And it's this U.S. Steel that will now be the heart and soul of building the ships for World War One. And these ships at World War One will be built in Hog Alley in New Jersey, and they will make these Liberty ships, and they will be able to produce these Liberty ships one every 3 or 4 days. So it's anybody that wants to check this out, you want to go to Hog Alley in New Jersey and look at the huge shipyards that were used to build all the World War One Liberty ships to bring American troops over to France in World War One. The military-industrial complex is now born. The steel monopoly is born. Then you're going to have an oil monopoly, and that oil monopoly will be under John D. Rockefeller. John D. Rockefeller was an absolute servant of the papacy because he was another dear friend of J.P. Morgan, and they both were dear friends of Edward VII, King Edward VII of England, who was the one who formally allowed the Jesuits to re-enter the British Empire, England, in around 1902. Edward VII will be the one who's going to foment World War I against the Protestant Second Reich of Germany. Okay. Well, meantime, as this is all unfolding internationally, the Jesuits are busy building their empire here. Well, when you're going to have an empire, you have to have a military dictator. You have to have a commander-in-chief that's going to act like an emperor.
Of course. Yep.
Okay. So the first emperor that we have that starts really acting like it is Theodore Roosevelt. And there's a very good book on him titled Theodore Rex. And it's about Theodore Rex Roosevelt, Theodore King Roosevelt. And he is the one who is responsible for the creation of the FDA in 1906. The FDA will be the Holy Office of the Inquisition against the health of the American people. This is where a few years later in the 30s they're going to outlaw the growing of hemp. And hemp, as said by Jefferson, is a great crop, and says America will be rich because America is rich in hemp. So the FDA is going to begin to take away the use of herbs, herbal remedies, and going to gradually addict the American people to pharmaceutical, oil-based, petroleum-based pharmaceuticals.
Right.
And every one of them is liver toxic.
Yep.
We have to remember that the health of the American people at this time was preeminent over all the other peoples because our national grain was millet, not wheat. And so we didn't have all this gluten infection. People had millet every day for...
That's a fun
so
word.
So we have to destroy the health of the American people. So the FDA became a font of this. In about 1901 or so, the American Medical Association is created.
Old AMA.
The AMA, American Medical Association. I like one of our alternative doctors calls it the American Murderers Association. And it's quite ironic because the first head of Hunter McGuire was a high Freemason, and he was a major at the time of the war between the states, and he was the major who was the one who removed Stonewall Jackson's left arm when he was wounded at Chancellorsville. But this is also the major who poisoned Jackson at Guinea Station on orders of Robert E. Lee. You see, Robert E. Lee was a traitor. Robert E. Lee never visited Jackson when he was sick. So this Hunter McGuire will be the first head of the AMA for a job well done. He will be the first man to tie off an aorta in surgery. And on his deathbed, just by coincidence, he is unable to speak. He is mute, so he can make no deathbed confessions. Here we have now the founding of the AMA, the FDA, and in 1908, we're going to have the founding of the Bureau of Investigation. The Bureau of Investigation is necessary if you're going to have an empire, because all empires have a secret police. The Bureau of Investigation was started by an Italian Roman Catholic, Charles Joseph Bonaparte, who was the Attorney General at the time under Theodore Roosevelt. And the Bureau of Investigation was created not by legislation of the U.S. Congress. It was created by executive order. So now we have our secret police in 1924. It's going to be called the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. And about that time, this mulatto, who is going to be a high Freemason, is going to head the FBI for nearly 50 years. And his name is J. Edgar Hoover. So as he heads this, he is going to be the Grand Inquisitor of the FBI. He will be completely and totally at the beck and call of the Jesuits at Georgetown University. He will be compromised in his morality because he's a notable sodomite homosexual with his right-hand man, Clyde Tolson. And the real guy that will be running the FBI is a Knight of Malta named Cartha D. DeLoach. Cartha D. DeLoach was really the one in command of the of Division 5 of the FBI at the time of the Kennedy assassination. Hoover was nothing. DeLoach ran everything.
Wow, so Hoover also was a mixed race or mulatto?
Yes, he was a mulatto, just like Warren G. Harding.
Wow, how is this kept under wraps, or why, would you say?
Well, they don't want that out, but you see, the Jesuits always want to use mulattoes as much as possible because mulattoes are always loyal to the white power structure against their own black race.
Oh, so they're the perfect sheep, or they're the perfect wolf in sheep's clothing.
That's correct. A man would never betray like a mulatto. And Obama betrays us.
Oh, he seems to certainly fill that role. Yeah, absolutely.
He is completely and totally in obedience to the white power structure controlled by the Pope. Okay, so now we have the Bureau of Investigations created. Now we're going to have... In 1913, some critical things happen here. We're going to have the 16th Amendment proclaimed ratified in February of 1913 during the presidency of Taft. Taft is skull and bones. Taft is a 33rd degree Freemason. According to Jeremiah Crowley in his great work, Romanism, A Menace to the Nation, that he published in 1912, he said that Taft and Wilson and... Taft and Wilson and Roosevelt were busy serving the Pope. So Taft, in serving the papacy for the 16th Amendment.
And to clarify, the 16th Amendment is the taxes one. It says what allows Congress to pay levy and income tax without apportioning among the states, blah, 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 blah.
That's right. The 16th Amendment remove the problem in the Pollock case of 1895. The Pollock case in 1895 declared that the Income Tax Act that had been passed wasn't like 1894, so it was unconstitutional because it taxed income from a certain kind of property that had to be taxed directly and therefore had to be taxed proportionally. So therefore, because this little portion of income came from this particular kind of property that could not be taxed uniformly and indirectly, the 16th Amendment was taxed to overturn that little problem in the Pollock decision. So the 16th Amendment overruled the Supreme Court Pollock decision of 1895. And by the way, if you want to read a great decision, you want to read Stephen Field's decision in that Pollock case. He talks about what's going to be the end of all this. Capital at war with labor. And of course, this is one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto. So, a heavy progressive graduated income tax.
Awfully clever criminals we're working with here.
We have to respect their brilliance. We have to respect their planning. We have to respect their ability to control men of power. So the 16th Amendment is declared to be ratified. I don't believe it ever was really ratified, according to Benson's work, The Law That Never Was. But it was declared ratified, and so now they have in place the income tax, which is an excise privilege tax on income derived from privilege. They now have that in place to be their war tax to finance their crusade that's up and coming called World War One.
Of course. Okay. Spending it before it even exists. Setting up the system to spend the money before it even exists. Absolutely brilliant.
Okay, so now to be able to finance this World War One, we have to have a central bank. So in 1913, in December 23rd, 1923, 2 days before Christmas, when the majority of congressmen are out on Christmas break, they shove the Federal Reserve Act down the throats of the Congress, and it is declared to be passed, of which Woodrow Wilson later said, "I've betrayed my country," when he was on his deathbed.
Perfect. Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back with the Cryptid Matrix.
You're listening to Revealing Talk Radio. We can't pay you for sharing and tweeting us on Facebook and Twitter, but we will love you for it. Find links on our website at revealingtalkradio.com and follow us today.
This is Matthew Cooper from the Positive Control Systems Show. All behavior is communication. Tune in and learn how to properly communicate with your family and everyone around you. Join me each Wednesday at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here on Revealing Talk Radio.
G'day, this is Timmy from the Timmy Down Under Show. I'm an Aussie bloke keeping it real on the Gold Coast of Australia. Check me out each week right here on Revealing Talk Radio. We've got the Aussie perspective. I'll be here waiting for you.
If you've ever wanted to host your own talk show, Revealing Talk Radio, the world's newest premier radio network, has an opportunity for you. We're looking for many topics, whether your interest is in business, sports, helping others, alternative news, or simply promoting a product. Revealing Talk Radio wants you to become a talk radio host today. Go to revealingtalkradio.com or call 407-796-2102. You're listening to Revealing Talk Radio.
For you tonight. Thank you for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. It's Revealing Talk Radio, the one and only, with Mr. Eric John Phelps of VaticanAssassins.org, also the author of Vatican Assassins, Wounded in the House of My Friends. We're back tonight talking about the birth of a war, ladies and gentlemen, how a war is conceived, planned for, and then birthed. We were just getting to that lovely point of World War One coming into existence. I think Eric was elaborating a little bit on how the foundation of this came together and the semantics behind the financial situation. So yes, thank you, Eric, for joining us.
Okay, we'll continue. The Federal Reserve Bank was created in 1913. 1914, World War I begins. The U.S. will enter into World War I in 1917, but World War I is going to be waged for several purposes, pursuant to the desires of the Vatican. And by the way, the Knights of Columbus were big pushers of getting involved in World War I. And this was one of the ways they tried to sell to the American Protestant people that the Catholic Knights of Columbus were really patriots and they were really Americans and they were on our side. But the fact of the matter is World War I was a papal crusade. And I have an old book titled Rome and the War, written by a guy named Watchman, that I hope to scan on to my website. But he shows you that the Jesuits were completely the authors of World War I. And what they accomplished in World War I was, first and foremost, the destruction of the Protestant Second Reich
in Germany. Of course,
yep. That had to go. Their coadjutor, Kaiser Wilhelm II, to facilitate that. Remember, Kaiser Wilhelm was the one who readmitted the Jesuits into Germany in 1917. The Jesuits had been formally expelled from Germany in 1872 by the great Prince Bismarck and Kaiser Wilhelm I and the German Reichstag, the German Parliament. And so Wilhelm allows him to re-enter, and Wilhelm also helps the Jesuits re-enter Rome in 1893 because the Jesuits had been expelled from Rome in about 1870, the time of the Vatican Council, First Vatican Council.
Wow, so he lets them all right back in.
And then, of course, his Ludendorff, Eric Ludendorff, is the one who called for unlimited submarine warfare, which ultimately led to the sinking of the Lusitania because Churchill's involved in this too. And that then justifies America coming into the war. So Erich Ludendorff is the first Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler is a continuation of Ludendorff. Ludendorff is the right-hand man of Kaiser Wilhelm II. So the Reich is destroyed, and that's the end of Protestant supremacy on the continent. And then the other thing that happens is you have the beginning of the destruction of the British Empire, which was historically Protestant. And what tied the British Empire together was its shipping fleet. Well, the German U-boats, the Wolfpack, took down 500 ships of the British Empire.
Yeah, they were a force back then. They were definitely, those U-boats were wreaking havoc.
Yep. That's right. That's right. And they were also intimately involved with Ireland, because Ireland was in the process of trying to break away from Britain, which they finally succeeded in 1922. So we have this destruction of the Protestant Second Reich, which was a real disaster. We have the destruction, the beginning of destruction of the British Empire. And then in 1917, during the war, we have the Jesuits fomenting the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia so that they can conquer the Orthodox Church. And who is going to participate in the financing of this? Why, the Pope's Federal Reserve Bank here in New York, to the tune of over $1 million. And you can read about this in the great work, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, by Anthony Sutton. Very classic work.
Makes sense, yep.
So the Pope's Federal Reserve Bank is going to be busy financing all the wars against the enemies of the papacy. And this is what I call the beginning of the Second 30 Years' War. The first 30 years war was from 1618 to 1648. The second, which was the attempted destruction of all Protestantism in Germany and Eastern Europe. And the second 30 years war began in 1914 and ended in 1945. That's how we must understand that era. So in 1917, we have the Bolshevik Revolution. And in the Bolshevik Revolution, the Jesuits are going to use their Lenin and Stalin and Trotsky. Yep. Mm-hmm. And they'll have front Jews like Trotsky and Lenin. And so they can blame the Bolshevik Revolution on the Jews. But the truth of the matter is Stalin was the real mover and shaker. Stalin was the one in 1922 who was made Secretary of the Communist Party by Jesuit Edmund Walsh, an American Jesuit, who went over to Russia and spent 2 years there helping setting up the Bolshevik government. And Stalin becomes the real head. Lenin is poisoned, and he's removed, so Stalin takes over. And what does Stalin do in the 30s? Why, he kills every Jew that's involved in the Bolshevik Revolution except one, Lazar Kaganovich. And he becomes the token Jew of Joseph Stalin during his communist Bolshevik socialist government. Okay, so now we have this World War One unfolding this whole time period. And in 1922, the Jesuits are formally readmitted back into Russia because they had been formally expelled by the great Alexander I in 1820 for attempting to overthrow the government there. So after over 100 years, the Jesuits are readmitted by Lenin and Stalin, which further proves to you the Jesuits were behind the Bolshevik Revolution. The other thing that happens in Russia is they do away with the Julian calendar, which was a calendar for the Orthodox Church, and they replace it with the Gregorian calendar, and the Gregorian calendar was authored by a Jesuit named Christopher Clavius.
Even their calendar was manipulated by these guys.
That's right.
Wow.
So that's what they accomplished with their Bolshevik Revolution and subsequent destruction of the whites, of the Orthodox whites. The Jesuits will kill over 5,000 priests and nuns of the Orthodox Church, getting rid of all the enemies of the papacy. So, as they're carrying this out, Hitler begins to come to power as the German people are robbed, raped, pillaged, and plundered by the Versailles Treaty, where the entire war guilt is put on Germany. When, if you read the book, The Russian Imperial Conspiracy by Robert Owen, who was an American senator, he shows you in that masterpiece work that the war was caused by France, Russia, and Great Britain, not Germany. So we have this horrible war reparation, which was just repaid about 6 months ago. World War One war reparations just paid by Germany about 6 months ago. And the entire war reparation was put on the German people, which resulted in a huge financial crash in Germany, the crash of the mark, which then paved the way for Hitler. And so Hitler comes to power, and who is he financed by? He's financed by a guy named Joseph Larkin. And you can read about Joseph Larkin in a book called Trading with the Enemy. It's a classic. You must have it for your library. It will tell you that Joseph Larkin was, I believe, the head of Chase Manhattan Bank. He was a Knight of Malta. It will tell you that in the book. And he was also a financier of Hitler and Mussolini and Franco. So we have this Federal Reserve Bank in place. We have the beginning of the second 30 years war when all these things are happening. In America, we have the Roaring Twenties from about 1920 to 1929.
Yep, everybody's doubling down.
Doubling down, doing the Charleston, acting wild. You have all this prostitution going on. You got the mob growing leaps and bounds. You got Al Capone building his prohibition area. By the way, they put prohibition on everybody so they could build the mafia.
Yeah, and you could still go crazy with hemp up until what? Like 19...
But hemp was not really the problem. It was the booze. And of course, we had all these Irish Roman Catholics and Italian Roman Catholics coming into Ellis Island. And Catholic cultures are always alcoholic, not Protestant cultures. So we're going to feed that with all this prohibition, remembering that the Bible does not condemn the drinking of alcohol. The Bible does not condemn the drinking of wine. The Bible does not condemn the drinking of strong drink. This whole prohibition was anti-Christ on the country by the papacy to create the desire to break this prohibition law. So, and who would provide all the booze? Why, the mafia. So they're now going to grow the Pope's mafia to a huge cartel capitalist syndicate.
Convenient, yep.
So this happens in the 20s. You got the Roaring Twenties going. And in 1929, we have the stock market crash, as I mentioned previously, orchestrated by Knight of Malta, Joe Kennedy. And due to John J. Raskob's influence in getting American farmers to invest on Wall Street, they lose their farms, and they have to leave their farms and start to leave and go to the major cities. This way, the Jesuits can then consolidate the farmland into their huge corporate farming,
yep,
and begin to feed the animals estrogens and pesticides and you name it, so that they become, so we have toxic meat. And the meat now produced in America is so toxic, so cancer productive,
yep,
so full of estrogen.
Totally agree.
That in Europe, it's illegal to buy American meat and import it into Europe.
Wow. I've also heard it's illegal for microwaves in Russia. Russia has banned microwaves because they're so dangerous.
Yep. They're so dangerous. That's right. Because microwaves incite viral growth, pathogenic growth and Royal Rife proved this in his lab. That's how he grew his cancer.
Yeah.
he used radiation to do it. Okay, so now we continue on. We got the Great Depression now. And remember, during this Great Depression, 10 million American people are going to die. Blacks, whites, you name it. They're going to be moved off their farms, moved into the cities. We're going to have the Dust Bowl. It's a horrible, terrible period of time. Young boys getting on trains, riding trains, the length of the country to find work and jobs. We have all sorts of crime. It's just awful. And so what happens also in 1930s, early 1930s, 32, we have World War I veterans who have been told they're going to get paid their $1,000 checks. And $1,000 in 1930 was like $10,000 right now because it was gold and silver dollars. And they were supposed to get their checks promised to them by Congress 10 years after World War I, but they refuse and they're not paid. And so these World War I veterans march on Washington, and they erect these shanties. This huge shanty town that they create is called Hooverville. Well, Herbert Hoover gives the order to General MacArthur, he's a colonel at this time, to end Hooverville. So MacArthur burns out the World War I veterans, burns out Hooverville. Here's the election of FDR. Yeah, because FDR said he'd never do such a thing. So FDR is elected in 32. Because remember that the whole feeling of the country, people are desperate. Crime is beginning is everywhere. You got the mob in all these places.
Yep.
You have you have all sorts of things. People are starving. And so what we have is we have a national crisis. And so the way he resolves his national crisis is in 1933 when he takes office on March 4th, and this is going to be the last president that's going to be inaugurated on March 4th. Every other president afterward, who's really now the military commander, he's going to be inaugurated on January 20th. They will amend the Constitution so that every inaugural after FDR's will take place on January 20th, because we have a change in government under FDR, and that is the institution of military government.
Wow, so that was the big turning point, is FDR out of hand, FDR, and it is totally different since then.
That's right. FDR is the Julius Caesar of this country. FDR is the conqueror. FDR is the man on the white horse, calling for change, and he has this winsome smile, just like Obama. Obama calls for change. He has a winsome smile. He's likable in his personality. This is FDR, but they're devils in what they do. So FDR, 2 days after he's inaugurated, has a proclamation, a banking holiday, and this proclamation is issued by virtue of his war powers, his ability to issue executive orders. This is the foundation for military government. 3 days later, the Congress, the Democratic Congress, controlled by Catholics for the most part, and Walsh of Georgetown University, they amend the Trading with the Enemy Act that was passed in 1917. Mm-hmm. And they amended in one word. Instead of forbidding trading with the enemies outside the United States, they're now dealing with enemies within the United States. And the ironic thing about this is the country's not at war. Who cares about enemies of the United States in 1933? We're not at war. Hitler just comes to power as chancellor. Japan hasn't attacked Manchuria. Nobody's at war. So what they did was that why they did this on March 9th of 1933 was to make every American citizen an enemy, a rebel, and a belligerent. That's the only way military government can be exercised. It's exercised over rebels who are declared to be belligerents in conquered territories.
Wow. So we're about 80 years into this tooth, is what you're saying. This is about 80 years ago they took over with this, declaring everybody an enemy combatant.
Yeah. That's correct. Because you can't have military government unless the people that you're governing are declared enemies and rebels and belligerents. So that's what was instituted then. FDR will then embark upon 15 pieces of legislation that were for the centralized power. Shortly after this, in April, he is going to confiscate the gold. And when the gold is confiscated, he makes it illegal to own gold or gold notes, which is in complete violation of the Constitution, because no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment. So now every state is bankrupt. They can't pay their debts. They're conquered territories. And when they take the gold, what FDR is going to do is they're going to melt the coins down and they're going to store the gold in a military fortress for the military government. And that military fortress is called Fort Knox.
Okay? Hmm.
The gold will later be moved out of Fort Knox into the basement of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York City. In 1934, FDR, according to Dr. Peter Beter, a Roman Catholic attorney in Washington, D.C., had over 1,000 cases. He used to have his reports, and I have 40 of his 80 tapes, conveyed legal title to the Federal Reserve Bank of all America's gold that was in Fort Knox. So I have pictures in my book of the 660,000 gold bars that are presently in storage at Fort Knox right now. Pardon me, the Federal Reserve Bank basement. So they give, and then in 1935, they pass what's called the Banking Act. And the Banking Act was put together by a Mormon Freemason, Mariner Eccles, who was the head of the Federal Reserve at the time, and also a man by the name of A.P. Giannini. A.P. Giannini is a Knight of Malta.
Dang, A.P. Giannini, another Knight of Malta. The Knight of Maltas are everywhere. Knights of Malta, I should say. Eric John Phelps, Vatican Assassins. We'll be right back. We got to cut to a quick break. Revealing Talk Radio, The Cryptid Matrix.
You're listening to Revealing Talk Radio. If you've ever wanted to host your own talk show, Revealing Talk Radio, the world's newest premier radio network, has an opportunity for you. We are looking for many topics, whether your interest is in business, sports, helping others, alternative news, or simply promoting a product. Revealing Talk Radio wants you to become a talk radio host today. Go to revealingtalkradio.com or call 407-796-2102.
Variety is a spice of life, and why not spice up your life with a Joe Show on Revealing Talk Radio? Monday through Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, the Joe Show goes live and brings you a variety of guests. We have guests such as celebrities, authors, comedians, musicians, and so much more. All this only on the Joe Show, live Monday through Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, on Revealing Talk Radio.
This is Matthew Cooper from the Positive Control Systems Show. All behavior is communication. Tune in and learn how to properly communicate with your family and everyone around you. Join me each Wednesday at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here on Revealing Talk Radio.
You're listening to Revealing Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. Revealing Talk Radio, Decrypted Matrix, another amazing interview. Part 6 tonight, ladies and gentlemen, with Eric John Phelps of Vatican Assassins. Just finishing up our thoughts as we cruise into the last and final section of tonight. Again, time flies when you're having fun with Eric John Phelps. Continue that thought, Eric.
Okay. So now we are in, the Banking Act of 1935.
Yep,
this is really intriguing. This is where all power is finally consolidated into the hands of the Federal Reserve. They have all financial power. Remember 1934, so FDIC is put out. We have the Social Security Act. We have FDR's New Deal. So that no bank can open up unless it's a member of FDIC. So all the state banks now were completely taken over by the Federal Reserve Bank. We now no longer have any state sovereignty in its banking system.
Oh, well, Eric, I thought that was for my protection, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. They're going to save my money for me.
Of course, that's right. Okay, so now with the Banking Act, with A.P. Giannini, we have to remember that he's a Knight of Malta. He's an Italian immigrant, Italian Roman Catholic. He is the founder of the Bank of Italy in San Francisco. And remember Charles Chiniqui, the ex-priest and turned Bible believer, born-again Christian man. He tells us in his 50 years of the Church of Rome that San Francisco, that lovely gem of the Pacific, has been in the hands of the Jesuits since 1850. And so this has a tremendous connection to the Comstock Lode, all the gold mining, Virginia City, you name it, all run by the Jesuits. The Comstock kings were all four Irish Roman Catholics, including the leader, Mr. Mackey, all connected to San Francisco. That Bank of Italy later is changed in its name to the Bank of America.
Bank of Italy is now Bank of America?
That's right.
Wow.
So A.P. Giannini, as the head of Bank of America, made a huge killing in real estate and housing when he worked together with Mariner Eccles with the Banking Act. So the Banking Act's put in place, and FDR signs it into law. And what we have is a problem, though, now when it comes to the law, is that the Jesuits cannot implement a military jurisdiction in the courts until they first do away with certain common law. So what we are living in presently at this time in 1935 is what's called the Lochner era. In 1905, there was a Supreme Court case called Lochner versus New York. And in that case, the Supreme Court protected the man's right to contract, his natural common law right to contract. So it was protecting common law rights. And so even though the privileges and immunities of 14th Amendment citizenship did include the Bill of Rights, there were still certain common law rights that were protected by Supreme Court decision. So those Supreme Court decisions had to be reversed. So the Lochner versus New York had to be reversed. So in 1938, on April 25th, the Supreme Court, packed by FDR, full of radical socialists, communists, Fabian socialists, decided the U.S. versus Carolyn Products case, handed it down on the 25th. And in that case, they overruled the Lochner era. That was the end of the Lochner era. There are no more common law rights protected by decisions of the Supreme Court. So, and when you're in federal district court, you can't claim I have the common law right to work, sir. And if I have the common law right to work, the money that I derive from that common law right to work is not income within the meaning of the term income. It's not profit or gain from a source, and I'm not in privilege. I'm just exchanging my labor for my money. So therefore, it's not income. Therefore, I don't owe the income tax. And remember, the American people didn't pay income tax on their labor until after 1938.
Right. Yep.
So now we're going to have another tax. We're going to have another Supreme Court case, and it's going to be handed down the very same day, April 25th, 1938, while everybody's preoccupied with War Admiral and Seabiscuit and their races, while people were busy watching the horse races. The Supreme Court was shoving these decisions down our throats. And this next case is classic, and it's called the Erie Railroad Company versus Tompkins. And Erie Railroad was a Pennsylvania railroad here. And in that case, they decided that there would be no more federal general common law, which means there will be no more federal common law process, which means there can be no more juries that will decide both the law and the facts. They will only now be able to decide the facts. the law will be given to them by the judge. This is a tenet of military jurisdiction. A military jury can only decide the facts. It cannot nullify the law.
Unreal. Wow. Okay.
Tompkins versus Erie Railroad Company, that reverses Swift versus Tyson of 1842. Swift versus Tyson was handed down by the godly and learned Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story, who was appointed to the Supreme Court when he was 32 years old. And he gave some marvelous decisions. I recommend you read his decisions when the next time you're at the law library. And that overturned his Swift versus Tyson. So now there's no more federal process at common law, and there are no more federal common law rights to be acknowledged by the court.
Yeah, no longer by the people. So take that out.
Therefore, I don't owe the income tax. Sorry, you don't have a common law right to work. That ended in 1938. But Judge, we have to have a common law process here where the jury can nullify a bad law. Sorry, we don't have a common law process here. That was done away with in 1938. And if you go to Pennsylvania Digest and you look at the spine of all those books, there's about 10 or 15 of them in the series, the date on that digest is 1938 to the present. 1938 began a whole new legal era for this country, and this began the military jurisdiction of this country.
This is so significant, Eric. I thank you for bringing this up, and I'll do a quick mention here on the computer related laws that are out right now, and the hacktivists and activists out there that are doing computer related methods of dissent, rather. And so now they're being under attack by these laws that are out of date, laws that were written, before the cloud existed, before the internet really existed, 1985, 1989, the Computer Abuse Act. And so there's people sitting in jail right now over laws that are outdated, and those juries will have no method of saying or nullifying an outdated law because now they can't do anything about it. It sounds like before 1938, we could have actually, the jury could say, hey, this law is bogus, it's out of date. But it sounds like you're saying, Eric, we don't have that ability anymore.
We don't have it, that's right, as far as federal process is concerned. Or state process. Every state court judge will tell you that, hey, when they voir dire a jury, they say, can you take the law as I give it? And they say, oh, yes, I can. And you have the power to judge the facts, but I give the law and you will uphold it. You see, what's the purpose of a jury?
But
you want to remember, this is a martial military jurisdiction. If you watch the movie Tom Cruise's A Few Good Men, that's a tremendous portrait of what a military jurisdiction is like. You have a 9-man jury. Because remember now, because you don't have the Sixth Amendment, we have a right to a jury trial of 12 people. That's no longer privilege or immunity of U.S. citizenship. So the state can give you an 8-man jury. The federal could give you an 8-man jury. 9-man jury doesn't have to be 12. They do 12 now, but it doesn't have to be that. They can change the rules if they want to.
Interesting. Okay.
So they have a jury there, and the jury can't know the facts. Now, the other thing is, in a military proceeding, in a martial proceeding, they always proceed in the name of the defendant in all capital letters. If you go to any military court, any court-martial, they're proceeding against the defendant, the soldier, in all capital letters. If you look at your discharge, if you have an honorable discharge or whatever, the name on the discharge is in all capital letters, and underneath the name is the Social Security insurance number, okay, and Commerce and War.
Yep.
Ezekiel 27, Commerce and War. So what we have now in this military process is we also have a flag that is trimmed in gold fringe and or it is topped with a cord and golden tassels. And a golden cord with tassels also shows a military jurisdiction. Even the when I was in a recent case here just last week in Kansas City, the flag in that courtroom there in courtroom B of the federal courthouse, it was not trimmed in gold fringe, but it had a cord and tassels in gold on the flag, showing you that the Republic, the flag of the Republic, as defined in Title IV, the Republic is under military government, evidenced by the tassels and cord on the flag.
Yep.
So the court is the military jurisdiction. On its face, it's a civil court. On its face, it's an Article III court. In its form, it's a constitutional Article III court. But its substance is it's a martial proceeding. It is a military jurisdiction while we're now under military government. So that's what they've done to us. And the judge has a tremendous amount of latitude. His whole purpose is to maintain the peace and keep order. So he's about 50% of everything he decides is up to him.
Yeah.
So we have tyranny. We have military government. This is absolutist tyranny. I have no respect for the courts. You say you have contempt of court? Absolutely. I have contempt for all of them. And so one way to deal with this is you need to get on a jury. And you need to hang the jury, no matter what the charge is, because, you see, it's a military jurisdiction, and it's not our fault that they did away with the common law jurisdiction.
And this is fascinating stuff. I've got to ask you, Eric, right before, because we got a couple minutes, maybe you can elaborate just a little on how this could be hidden, because some of the listeners might be thinking, well, why don't the prosecutors know this, and why don't the big-name attorneys, you know, why don't they know this? Why isn't this used more often?
Do know it. They don't want you to know it. Look, the attorney, he makes a fortune in court. He makes a fortune in the military jurisdiction. Why would he want to betray its secret power? The judge, he's hailed as someone great when he goes out to dinner. Oh, judge, you know, we measure reservations here. They don't know that he's a tyrant, that he's an agent for Washington's military government. Have no idea. You have to keep this quiet, and you can only do it with secret societies like Freemasonry and so on. And they're the ones that really implemented all of this. FDR, the Freemason, Dirty Harry Truman, the Freemason, he has his proclamation on December 16th, 1950, where he has an emergency proclamation for the Korean War, and that proclamation is still in effect. It's that Truman proclamation that the Vietnam War was waged on and every war thereafter, and that's why Congress has not declared war ever since.
Yep. That makes perfect sense.
And now under this military government, the Congress has a complete and total legislative absolutism. It can pass laws on anything. It's not limited what it can spend money on. It can spend money on anything it wants to because we're under military government.
Wow.
The Supreme Court is the great regulator of the statutes that are passed. And its purpose is to keep the peace. But the Supreme Court is under military government also, and so it's just merely regulating what's going on.
What can you tell us about Chief Justice John Roberts, right, real quick before we go? Is he a Knight of Malta? He's got
Yes, he's a Knight of Malta after he okayed and voted for the Obama Unhealth Care Act, a 2,500-page act that nobody read, and betrayed all of his conservative constituents. The first thing he did was take a plane to Malta, and he went to Malta, and he was inducted in the Knights of Malta.
Yeah, it makes sense that he must have served his masters well, because he was just a prosecutor with the initial terrorists that came out of, you know, the 2001 attacks, 9/11 attacks, uh-huh. And then he was escalated, made the commissioner, I think, of the 9/11 report or something like that. He was put in a convenient place to cover up facts, I remember, that were involved with the commissioner report, and now he ends up Chief Justice. I mean,
they made
come
him
on.
Chief Justice. That's right.
Of course, it makes complete sense.
Yeah, with 6 Roman Catholics on the court, no Protestants, and a couple of Jews. So the Jews are in the CFR, busy serving the Pope. So they have it all. It's their military government, and this is their interim between the federal republic, the de jure government that we once had before 1933, and the martial law they seek to impose in the not-too-distant future. So we need to realize this is what was done, and we need a president that will revoke the executive order of March 4th, 1933, and the executive order of December 16th, 1915 that will completely do away with military government. Right, then and there.
Basically, we need a president that has some cojones to stand up to these thugs, these gangsters that have taken over. Eric, an amazing hour we had. Thank you so much for joining us. We fitted in perfectly, I think, to this episode. We squeezed in just enough stuff. Thank you so much. It's always great to have you on the show.
Pleasure to have you, Max. Lord bless.
Yep. Take care.
Bye-bye.